Why, Crusher, it's good to see you.
You're listening to Crush Performance with the Crusher, Jeff Crushell. Get in on the talent grid and text Crush at 101260 with your questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks.
And welcome to Crush Performance, everybody. Jeff Crushell here, the con man behind the glass, keeping us on track, and we're your weekly source for performance information. Listen, if you want to get in touch with us, go to our website, crushperformance.com. Sign up for our newsletter. You can also subscribe to our podcast and get linked up with the world of performance, because that's why we're here, to help you get better and to answer your questions and investigate any ideas you might have. And on that note, if you do have ideas or topics you'd like us to investigate, please let us know. We've actually dedicated entire episodes to some of the ideas coming across the mailbag, so get to us. We love them all for sure. On Twitter, you can go to @JeffCrush, and on all social media platforms, Instagram, which I'm slowly getting a handle on, our Facebook page, and also our YouTube channel. Search out Crush Performance. We're having a lot of fun there, and getting a lot of great feedback. It's a great way to interact, I'm finding, though it does take some time, but very, very worthwhile investment. So follow us there and get to us on those platforms. Today, listen, a real important show. I wanted to get to this one as the summer sort of winds down and we get set for fall sports. I mean, everything's getting underway here. Things are heating up big time. College sports, we have the NFL, CFL's well underway, Major League Baseball is going into the playoffs, rumblings from the NBA, and of course, NHL camps are getting ready to open. And it's a real exciting time of year for everybody. But are we starting in the right place? You know, we've been talking about the world of performance and human performance for upwards of 12 years now. I've been involved in the industry for, man, I hate to say it, but close to 30 now. And it's just a beautiful place to be. I'm not going to lie to you. And one of the inspirations behind our book, The Performance Plan, Strategies for Top Performance in Sport, Business, Coaching, and Life, that book is the starting point. You know, I was asked to write a book for years and years, and I just thought to myself, you know, all the good stuff is written already. I'll just tell you where to go to get good information. But it was after a presentation I made, a colleague of mine who's written a couple books came to me and said, Jeff, it's time for you to put pen to paper and get your butt in gear and write a book. And I'm going, but listen, man, the books have been written. He didn't have anything, didn't want anything to do with that. He said, look, but you've got your perspective, which might really, really relate to a lot of people. He goes, I know it does to athletes and organizations you work with. So why not help people out? And that's why we wrote the book. Listen, that book, I sat for months and months trying to figure out, okay, what do you write? There is so much to write. There's so much to think about in the world of performance, sport and beyond. But where do you focus your efforts in terms of writing a book and sharing a message? Well, we sat down with our group, some of the coaches, organizations, and athletes I've worked with in the past, and the consensus was across the board, one of the most important things we've done to help people and organizations out is really identify the starting point. Identify where you're at, identify where you want to go, and then start planning out what you need to do in the middle to get it done. Unfortunately, I think all too often, we start way, way too far down the road. So we're going to kick off this conversation today on an interesting note. One, getting organized for sure. We'll talk about that later in the show and things you can think about. But what are some of the things you need to do before you start? One, to make sure you can maximize your performance based on where you're at and what you can do, but also reduce your risk of injury. We know that the number one reason athletes don't achieve or don't reach their true potential is injury. That's the number one reason. Then we have burnout. Then we have, you know, the intangible variables that you just can't control, trades, life circumstances. There's many variables that come into play there, but injuries are a big one. So what can we do from the start to reduce the risk of injuries? Let me ask you this. Do you think it's possible that anxiety and stress, coping strategies, and mindset impact your risk of injury, maybe even the severity of your injury, and possibly even your recovery time? Well, there's research out there, and powerful research, and it's mounting and growing, that says absolutely yes. These are concepts like daily hassle levels, uplift scales, your susceptibility to stress, and trait irritability. What does all this mean and how does it apply to you? Well, you're going to be surprised. And it's not just a little bit. This stuff can have a major impact, not just on your performance and your ability to learn, develop, and train, but also on our ability to reduce the risk of injury. And I'm not talking just a little bit. There are big, big numbers coming out of the research, and these are legitimate studies from all over the world. Up to 50% decrease in injuries for at-risk players who've been through intervention strategies to help them deal with stress and irritability and teach them how to cope with the factors and issues that they're facing on a day-to-day basis, but also how to plan properly and how to be in a mode where you can adjust and make meaningful adjustments. There is power in being in control. A lot of us aren't in control because, well, we haven't set up anything to control in the first place. And that's why you need a performance plan right off the get-go. It's the starting point of everything. Today, we're going to talk with Dr. Martin Mrazek, Associate Professor at the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Alberta, about some of the adjustments that have been made in sport. Listen, we've made a lot of progress in sport when it comes to reducing the risk of injury and improving player health in the field of play. Some great things have been going down in terms of education and also rule changes. We're going to talk about all this, but the rule changes are an interesting one. And we're going to ask Dr. Mrazek about this because when we start changing human behavior in one way, what might be the impact on the other side? And we've seen it in real time in professional sport. Some of the rule changes that have been meant to reduce the risk of head injuries and concussions have resulted in an increase in injuries in other areas like the lower body in the NFL or in the NHL. So there's issues that you need to consider in the big picture, but we're making progress. And when it comes to you personally, there's things that you have to address. If you go back to a show we did, I think in 2015, Dr. Mrazek, who's a crush favorite, was on the show with one of his colleagues, Dr. Urban Johnson, who is an associate professor at the Center for Research on Welfare, Health, and Sport at Halmstad University in Sweden. He's done a bunch of research in terms of sport and on the psychological side, on the psychology side, mindset, and these coping strategies. Are there ways that we can help athletes reduce their risk of injury before they even step onto the field? Well, his research has been all powerful, looking at professional soccer players in Europe, and those numbers of 50, 55% reduced risk of injury for at-risk athletes is very, very powerful. So I went back to the Crush archives to go back to the show with Dr. Mrazek and Dr. Johnson to get a couple of clips that stood out in my memory. And the first one sort of paints a picture as to the power of psychology and how we can identify at-risk athletes to reduce their risk of injury. Listen to this from Dr. Johnson.
That the big teams and the big leagues now have sport psychologists, not just working with peak performance orientation, but also working with injury prevention. Not all leagues, of course, but you can see them more and more. The reason for this is, of course, the research that have reached the bigger audience, that you can actually work with psychological intervention and come up with really interesting results, especially when you work with at-risk athletes who maybe are prone to be injured. If you have the right prevention intervention, you could probably lessen the injury rate with, I would say, 50, 60, 70% for these groups, especially for the at-risk population.
So if we were to classify or try to explain what an at-risk athlete mm-hmm. might be, how would we explain that to our audience? Well, could I be at risk? I guess, am I at risk? I want to know. Hey, those are big numbers, 50, 60%.
Yeah. Wow. Well, you can do that in several ways. But what we have done is to look at the way the anxiety level of the athletes, if they are very high anxiety, but also if they have faced a lot of stress in their life the last 6 or 12 months. And we also look at the way they behave when they cope with different difficulties in life, like a tough coach and so on. And if you take these three together and you have high anxiety rate, face a lot of stressors, and immature coping skill facing stressors, you probably would be an at-risk person.
So there you got an example of the work they've done already, identifying risk factors in at-risk athletes in teams and then attacking the individuals, helping them with coping strategies and systems to deal with it moving forward. And not only are we seeing reduced risk of injuries, but these athletes aren't also performing better. They're recovering better at night because they're sleeping better. Part of this is all due to the strategies that Dr. Johnson and his group have applied and taught these at-risk athletes. So it's all powerful. There's no doubt about it. But to identify if you're at risk or what factors put you at risk is another question. So I asked Dr. Johnson if we could go back into an athlete's life and identify maybe incidents or circumstances that may have caused them stress or that they may not have been able to deal with, and do they help us teach that athlete to manage now? Here's what he had to say.
I think you can link back quite a lot to the psychological issues, and not at least issues that are in relation to history of stressors for these players, and also what we call daily hassle. Because we know from our research and also from practice that if a person exposed with a lot of stress in their life the last maybe 6 or 12 months, the risk of being sick or injured is really high. So I think here we have one issue that we should explore definitely more in detail.
So I think if we do look at this for a second, in order to understand this, let's take an athlete from the moment they were injured. What you guys would do is go back and look at the year prior to that injury and try to find out what kind of factors might have led up to and maybe played a factor in that injury happening.
Actually, we have done that in different populations, for instance, in soccer and other sports, floorball. And what when we interview persons who have been injured, severely injured, and then take them back to the injury day and ask them, did something happen in your life just before this injury occurred? Quite a lot of these athletes say that, well, now when you ask me the question, actually things happen in my life that I had not thought about before. And when we ask them, what happened? Well, it's quite a lot relates to stress in life, but also stress in relation to other people outside of the sport arena. And some few also talk about the high strains and fatigue, that they were very tired from a psychophysiological perspective. So these two combinations really make people, I think, unfocused.
It sounds to me like you could be talking about Tiger Woods right here. A classic example, I think, of a guy who was totally distracted in his world of sport. A guy that was, you know, got caught doing stuff that, well, he probably didn't want to get caught doing. And what did we see from him? Well, we saw a massive decrease in his overall performance, but also we saw the onset of some major injuries. So this might be an example.
I think it's now when you say it, it's quite a good example of this. And of course, you can see you can find other examples in team sports where they had the same background and it eventually end up in a quite bad situation. And of course, being severely injured for Tiger Woods or some other persons is a really big blast. And I think we coming back to our discussion before, I think we can do quite a lot to help these athletes.
So there you have it. There is a lot we can do to help these athletes cope. And we can also now identify athletes who are at risk or athletes that might tend to be at risk moving forward. Really big, important stuff in the world of sport. Now, the question comes full circle. Are we starting in the right place? Think of yourself or your program or your athletes. And let's just try to maybe imagine where their focus is in terms of their performance. We know that we have a tendency to overfocus on outcomes and results, which is a disaster. You cannot be thinking about your result while you're trying to prepare or even trying to compete. And if you do, you're doomed. Now, you can think about and plan what you want to try to accomplish in a particular event, but you can't focus on that during the actual play. And that's a big mistake. And then we also worry about how we're being perceived, and we worry about what we should be doing and what we're not doing, rather than just being in the moment, which is a true skill unto itself. But when it comes to actually planning out a career plan, now, whether it's a young athlete starting out, or whether it's a veteran athlete getting ready for a season, a phase of a season, or a major event, are we starting in the right place in terms of our focus? Well, I'm telling you, I have rarely seen an athlete or an organization focus on the right things first. We always start way down the line, and most of it is focused on the technical, tactical aspect. And here's what I can tell you. The technical coaches, the coaches who go out and teach the skills and manage the games, they are all important in the moment. But listen to me carefully. They cannot do their jobs well if they don't get athletes and players who can do what needs to get done. The outcomes, the actual performance of sport is such a secondary, tertiary, it's way down the line in terms of development. Unfortunately, that's what we focus on first in the world of sport. And we lose so much talent because of this. We're destroying more talent than we're creating. I am so convinced of that for sure. And it has just a lot to do with not knowing. Nobody's doing it intentionally. Don't get me wrong. That's just not the case. It's just that I think we get so excited about the end results. We all want to be good at a sport or at a skill that we don't do what really needs to get done to tap into our true potential. And that's what performance planning is all about. It's about mapping out the progression of development. And think about this. Right now, sitting where you're at or standing where you're at or listening to the show, you have a ceiling of potential and it's marked right now, whatever it might be for you personally. Our job in terms of our performance planning is not only to improve your performance in the moment, what can we do to help you right now, but also to look down the road, however long that might be. In my programs, I love a 3-year window. A 3-year window is perfect. And we're constantly manipulating, shifting in a state of flux that entire time as the athlete progresses. But we're constantly looking at how we can improve and help an athlete right now, whatever it might be, with the idea that we want to raise that ceiling of potential continuously for as long as humanly possible. Unfortunately, take for example, specialization. We know that for the majority of sports, if you specialize before the age of 10, it's a dangerous, dangerous game to play. All the things we know about, and we talk about all the time, burnout, risk of injury, and all those things that go along with early specialization. But what we don't think about is the lack of true athletic development, the skill base, and the experiences that you lose by not playing other sports actually lowers that ceiling of potential way down the road. Yes, your kid or you as a performer might be really good right now, but down the road when it really counts, draft day, scholarship, your first pro contract, most of those athletes have not specialized early. And there's data out there as well. As a matter of fact, I'll look to maybe post some of the studies that have been done looking at early specialized athletes as compared to athletes who played multiple sports. They all played and participated over a period of time, over a period of years, the same amount. One athlete just did a bunch of different things. One athlete specialized. The alarming surprise to everybody, and it's really not a surprise, is that the athletes that specialized had a hard ceiling that could not be broken because they didn't have the wherewithal or the robustness, the well-rounded skill sets or athletic abilities to push through to the next level. So keep that in mind as you plan out your career or your young athlete's career for sure. But more importantly, how do we keep our athletes healthy? Coming up right after the break, we're going to talk with Crush favorite, Dr. Martin Mrazek, associate professor from the Department of Educational Psychology at U of A, about exactly this. So stick around, everybody. A very important conversation coming up right after this on Crush Performance. Hey, everybody. Jeff here. I just wanted to give you all a heads up that we just discovered this week the subscription button for the Crush Performance newsletter hasn't been functioning properly. So I want to thank everybody who wrote in to let us know. The Crush membership is very important to us, and our weekly newsletter is a big part of how we help our members develop the very best plan for getting control, getting focused, and getting results no matter what your goals and objectives are. So if you've recently tried to sign up for our newsletter, please try again at crushperformance.com. Our incredible tech people have the problem solved, and we'd love to hear from you. Let's get back to the show. More Crush Performance right now.
Find out what it takes to be a top performer. Get the Crush blog, podcast, and newsletter at crushperformance.com. Now, back to the show.
Welcome back to Crush Performance, everybody. Listen, if you do want to get to us with any questions, comments, or smart-ass remarks, we love them all. CrushPerformance.com is the website. You can follow us on Twitter, at Jeff Crush, and on all social media platforms, Facebook, Instagram, and check out our YouTube channel. Just search out Crush Performance. Well, a very important discussion today as we head into the topic of kind of starting in the right place. for a couple of reasons. One, to make sure you're on the right track to maximize your performance no matter what you're doing. This doesn't have to be isolated to the world of sport. Sport, again, is just a great reference point because it's so measured and we can see the progress and we can also map out and see the impact of shifts and changes that we make along the way. But not only to improve performance, but to decrease risk of injury. I think all too often we start way too far down the road of the developmental plan. We spend very, very little time setting ourselves up and planning. And a lot of times that's because we don't really know what to do. Well, there's a lot of strategies now that we've learned over the last few years and a lot of great research, as we heard in the first segment there, that is now showing us how important it is to take care of the details, maybe even before we get into performance planning. Well, to talk about that more, we're joined now by crush favorite Dr. Mark Mrazek, Associate Professor in the Department of Educational Psychology at the University of Alberta. Dr. Mrazek, thanks for joining us today.
Great to be here, Jeff.
Well, it's one of our favorite times of year, this sort of late summertime. There's so much going on in the world of sport, but maybe nothing more important than the NFL season coming close and the preseason well underway as we look at the injuries. We also have high school football and college football and developmental football getting underway. And of course, we all know over the last few years, there's been some really, really important discussions and breakthroughs as well in terms of helping to keep our athletes safe, especially when it comes to head injuries. Dr. Mrazek, you've been on this show a number of times talking about that topic for sure. What's your confidence level right now in general, maybe in terms of where we're at in terms of head injuries and football and contact sports and keeping our players safe?
I would say, Jeff, I'm pretty optimistic. I've said this a few times publicly, and I would continue to say that I don't think there's really a better time. You know, when I look at the changes in the protocols for concussions at the elite levels, all the way down to minor hockey levels, Hockey Canada just came out with their new concussion guidelines. I think we just understand a lot more about the importance and the commitment that it takes to managing concussions. It certainly has been a topic in the media. And so there's been a really good response from the medical community. I mean, there's always things to learn. There's always things that we can do. But overall, I think there's a lot of good reason to think that, you know, we've really turned this ship around and that things are in a positive direction. Even though concussions will always be an issue in sport, I think that we have a much better handle on it than we ever have.
Yeah, I think we've gotten sort of through that really scary phase of not understanding. And maybe it wasn't not so much not understanding, but knowing a little bit, but not knowing enough in terms of the big picture. But we've sort of come full circle. If we look back even 5 years where we really, really started focusing on this, you know, with the Sidney Crosby and the NFL lawsuits, and we've really come a long ways. And I think the confidence level is great, but the understanding and awareness right now, right down to the grassroots, I think that's a real positive step forward.
For sure, and I would say that, you know, the old challenges are, Jeff, is still understanding and recognizing what a concussion is. And it's funny, we have our definitions, but even those have changed a little bit in the international concussion guidelines. So there still is a bit of a moving target. I think more and more people understand the importance of managing a concussion, but I think definitely we've understood the topic a little bit more. And, you know, the science sometimes is a little slow when we come to designing these really big studies to understand a certain topic. But over time, the science and the funding that's gone into it. And just to give you a bit of a picture of what that looked like, so in the late 90s, there was a total of less than 20 scientific studies that had been published in the literature. And as of last week, there was somewhere in the neighborhood of close to 50,000 specific to sports-related concussion. So that just gives you a bit of a magnitude of what we've learned in the last few years.
Well, such a positive move forward. And of course, we see the concerns that young parents have now for their kids. And, you know, one of the examples we could talk about right now is the enrollment and the participation in high school football in North America on the decline, down quite a bit, actually, from 2008, where overall high school participation in sport is on the upswing, which is also a very positive thing. But for the game of football, a game that we really do love, I think we need now to maybe step back and embrace it. You guys have been doing some really, really important work at the professional level that I think is going to trickle down and impact the development side as well. And that has to do with assessments, Dr. Mrazek. This is sort of in conjunction with a couple of the pro leagues, the NFL and CFL, some really, really exciting work being done.
Yeah, and you know, the evolution of the sideline assessment continues. It's certainly great to see some a lot of research come in to look at how do we better refine our techniques and how do we better measure things. You know, one thing I think that this whole commitment to concussions has been really great because I think players are much more open. Everybody's familiar with baseline testing. And the reason why that's important is in an important moment where players have to talk about the recent hit that they had, you know, just the ability to articulate and be willing to talk about, yeah, I'm not feeling great or that has become really important. And if people weren't sure of something, they're less likely to talk about it. But now that we have had these conversations, I think that's a really important sign. And I certainly hope that is one of the factors that can change the momentum that we've seen in football. I think the negative press that's come with it and the worries about the long-term outcome have certainly had an impact. I think there's a lot of other variables like people playing other sports and so on, but I think there clearly has been a relationship about worries about concussions. So, you know, the sideline assessment tool is becoming better at that. And also the important thing is having athletes understand that if they take the right steps, it's actually going to be in their best interest. They'll get back to play quicker. There'll be fewer negative outcomes. Those important messages are things that the scientific community has to keep emphasizing.
Yeah, and I agree. We're talking with Dr. Martin Mrazek, associate professor at the U of A. Dr. Mrazek, here's an interesting one for you. Not to throw this one at you, but maybe we can talk about this in the best way possible. Because the long-term effects that we're now assessing, those players are coming from an era where we were not having these discussions. We didn't know. You know, we come from, as you mentioned, a time when in the 90s where there was only 20 scientific studies. There's 50,000 now. So if you and I were, and again, not to put you on the spot here, but if we were to project through our crystal ball and look forward to where today's players are now turning into their 40s, their late 50s, because of what we know and how we're handling head injuries now, do you think it might be possible, and again, not to put you on the spot here, that we might not see the dramatic long-term effects that we are supposedly seeing right now from players from years gone by?
Yeah, I mean, that's a great question, and I'd be willing to say, yeah, I really believe that. And the reason why I say that, Jeff, is that we've really understood that repetitive concussions where there's no intervention or there's no resting time, that has been something that has really dramatically changed. And if we just look at stats in the NFL and the CFL, the length of time that a player is diagnosed to the time that they return has increased. And because of that, you know, we've seen the benefit effects of that. I know in the CFL, we've had a reduction in the number of repeat concussions that have occurred in the last couple of seasons. I know the NFL is looking at some of those numbers as well. So those are important things there. And again, if we can rest the brain and take care of it in its traumatic state after concussion, then that's also a good thing. You know, other variables, I think we're really starting to understand that it's not just concussions, Jeff. We're looking at brain health mm-hmm. and that there's a lot of factors that go into, you know, keeping a brain healthy and functional. And we can't just do things that we like we used to. Anything that I know you emphasize a lot, which is nutrition, which is hydration, those factors, I mean, it really is shown in the scientific study when we look at the numbers in the latter parts of football and hockey games, that those are things that we have to keep in mind. So there's a lot of these variables that I think we're addressing. Now, of course, there's all these things that we can understand, but, you know, in my opinion, I think there's definitely a much better understanding of what's going to happen in the future rather than the unknowns that we had even 10 years ago.
Yeah, a very exciting time and a very positive time in contact sports for certain. And it's also, as you mentioned, all this research and knowledge has spurred on changes in the game. Some are, I guess, well-received, some not so well-received in the big picture. But at the end of the day, if a rule betters the chance of increasing athlete health and wellness, it's the right move forward. In soccer, for example, so I coach my daughter's U14 soccer team. It's a community team, a bunch of girls that's out having a great time playing a game that they love. But when we see organizations like USA Soccer ban heading up to the age of 11, they want to push it to 13. I think that's a positive move forward. When we see a banning of body checking in hockey at the developmental levels, I think that's a positive move forward. Also, some of the moves we're seeing in football and hockey in terms of the rule changes and the type of hits that are allowed and not allowed, this is all really, really positive moves forward that I think are really going to, I guess, impact the overall wellness of the athletes long-term and short-term.
Yeah, for sure. And I know some of those rule changes come with their share of controversy. And I think developmentally, The research is really kind of mounted to suggest that, you know, younger kids who are exposed to the direct head contacts is just not a good thing. Now, the other side of it is just the skills that go into that. You know, and that's why I think Hockey Canada has done a really good job of suggesting that, you know, for some levels of hockey, as they get into their teen years, that body checking is still fine, as long as there's other parameters in place where in other leagues, you know, some people, you know, are just not exposed to that. So I think there is a lot of wisdom to that. Again, we want to be careful not to regulate human behavior too much. I mean, as I have mentioned on the show before, in the NFL, when they brought in the targeting the head rule, then we saw a sudden increase in knee and leg injuries the next year. So human behavior is complex, especially in a very quick sport like, or sports like hockey and football. Mm-hmm. But again, it tells us that there's a commitment to really address this issue. And I think the positive thing that I've seen is that it's not just looking at, okay, let's get concussions out of the game or reduce concussions. It's about brain health and being healthier and being fit. Because if you're injured, you're going to, you know, be out and you're going to miss out on activity. All those important variables that if we keep athletes healthy and happy, that it really is in their best long run to keep playing sports.
It was great. I was at a one of my nephew's baseball games. He is 13, and one of the players collided at first base, and it was elbow on head. So immediately, everybody thought, okay, head injury. Let's get the coaches ran out there, and out of four coaches, two from the visiting team, two from my nephew's team, there was three scat three cards out before they hit first base. How great is that in terms of awareness and I guess maybe knowledge? And that's grassroots, just fun baseball.
Yeah, it's almost bringing tears to my eyes, Jeff. But
yeah,
no, that's that. It just shows you, right, that people are aware of that and they want to take it seriously. So I just think that's a good thing, and it does reflect some of the positive changes that we've seen.
Yeah, for sure. Well, shifting gears now, there's a lot of other things going on to improve not just player performance, which is what we're all about and we love so much, but also can we increase performance while we reduce risk of injuries? Head injuries being part of the big picture, no question about it. Dr. Mrazek, we've had some great conversations over the years on various things and various ways that athletes can go about decreasing the overall risk of injuries. But, you know, we focus on the physical side a lot, and I think the mental side and the organizational side of an athlete's life is often overlooked. But there's some groundbreaking, powerful work being done on that side of it. Maybe we could talk about that for a bit, because I'd really like to get everybody thinking about this.
Yeah, no, I know you've been, you know, emphasizing that for many years. And so just a bit of a background is, you know, stress in sports, of course, we know can be a good thing and motivates players. But when it comes to the negative consequences like anxiety, that's just not good for the mind and the body. And so the research that's, you know, I think you're referencing here is really the research that it helps athletes to think through the impact that negative stress and anxiety can have on their body. And especially when it comes to making decisions that have to be made in the context of play. And so what we're trying to do here is really help athletes, especially those that are at high risk for anxiety and high risk for stress and worry, to help them manage that. Everybody can relate to a stressful day at work and then having a sore neck and a headache and all those type of physiological signs of that. And athletes, of course, are not a lot different, is that when they're stressed, their bodies are under stress, and tight muscles and higher levels of cortisol are never a good thing, both in the short term and long term. It's not good for sleep. It's not good for the musculoskeletal system. There's many reasons why high levels of anxiety and stress. So, you know, the question we're getting at is what do we do with that? And how do we take an athlete and work with them so that they're able to feel like their bodies are more relaxed and so on? So that's kind of the context of it. I wasn't sure if there's more of a specific direction that you're wanting to go with that.
No, that's a perfect, I guess, sort of look at the landscape out there. Because you know what? I think, Dr. Mrazek, there's so much pressure in sports now. Even at the youngest, most basic grassroots levels, I think kids are feeling too much pressure to perform well. And it's not a necessary part of sport in any way, shape, or form. We know kids play better when they're having fun and not feeling the pressure. But that being said, pressure in sport, or sport rather, is a type of stress. And when you're competing against other people, or whether it's with a team or as an individual, there is going to be stress there. So I really like the idea of talking about coping strategies. It is okay to feel a little pressure. It's okay to feel maybe a little anxiety. But when it gets too far, there's also help out there. And I think that's really the strong message we need to send. Getting back to the basics and fundamentals, if that makes sense.
Yeah, no, it makes a lot of sense. And you know, you're talking about good behavior psychology. And you know, in one fun conversation, we talk about you know, certain athletes like Patrick Roy used to talk to his goalposts, and Gretzky had his superstitions about tucking in his jersey a certain way. And you know, everybody kind of, but those are a reflection of stress and anxiety, right? And obviously they were, you know, kind of managing it. But when we think about changing habits, like how do most people respond to stress? Well, they usually kind of have their certain ways of dealing with it, whether they get, you know, they internalize and they get really discouraged or negative talk towards themselves, or if they get more externally aggressive. There's different ways. And so what you're talking about is really regulating behavior and regulating the mind, and some mindfulness, and introducing that into sports has become really important. And so we're looking at some of these clinical trials where we're doing that, where we're having athletes actually practice these things and not just hear about it. Anybody can go to a YouTube link and look at it. It's really practicing and learning what it means, and think about how the body feels when it's in a more relaxed state. And, you know, the research there is pretty compelling. There was a recent meta-analytics study that came out of Sweden, and they found that they're reducing the injury in soccer at elite levels by around 8% by really incorporating these principles. And so it really is staggering. I mean, we can't think of too many other variables where if you make a change, you're going to reduce injuries by that much. So even though it's basic stuff and people have heard this before, I think it's really understanding and practicing it that can make a huge difference.
I think this is one area, Dr. Mrazek, where maybe the tough guy mindset still is there. You know, hey, I can tough through this. I don't need to talk to anybody about this. But these coping strategies that we're seeing, these abilities to deal with your anxiety, your stress, and your worry, there are really strategic, simple things you can do that can help out. And it's okay to talk about that. And that's why I think this is such a great body of work that's happening now, looking at, you know, dealing with these things. And inside of sport, it's such a great platform to teach us, because this will impact every part of your life. You don't have to be an athlete to feel any of this or to use coping strategies.
Yeah, for sure. And one of the things that you know, certainly we're trying to implement at different levels of sport is just really, as you say, just really impacting positive life skills. And so one of the things we found is that by pairing athletes into groups at the start of the season and then encouraging them to have conversations with each other, not just like sitting down for coffee, but having a plan to check in with each other. You know, if we look at architecture, the strongest shape is the triangle. And so when we look at some of the social psychology research that came in the 70s, groups of three can actually be very productive when it comes to certain tackling certain problems. And so we're starting to incorporate some of those principles to get athletes, even at the younger level, to talk with each other. So, you know, you have a buddy who's with you. Maybe you're going through a tough time. And you know, some of the studies that came in the 70s when we looked at exposing these rhesus monkeys to all kinds of stress in a lab, like loud horns and noises, and they looked at their cortisol levels, when they added another monkey to that same setting, there was basically the cortisol levels and the stress response in the rhesus monkey was halved. Hmm. So it just shows you the power of these individuals, of people. But, you know, it's really kind of helping people understand what that looks like and how to have a good conversation without it sounding, you know, too awkward. But those are the type of things that, you know, I think by implementing it, a team strategy, we've seen can be very effective.
Oh, I really like this, Dr. Mrazek. And, you know, we've had some of the top trainers and leaders from SEAL teams and military. They do very, very similar strategies with buddy systems where, you know, there's power in numbers, I guess.
Yeah, exactly. And for most people, just having a safe place to talk with somebody else, that in himself, everybody knows, you go to Starbucks, you have a coffee with a friend, it's a good time. Like it's a good thing for you. And so, but in introducing into sports is kind of an interesting, because there's stereotypes about relating on personal levels. And yet I think when we put it in the context, hey, this is good for you, this is good for your brain, this is good for, you know, your overall stress levels. When we really explain and understand that and really find ways that athletes say, hey, well, this is how I connect well with other people, you know, like I say, the impact this has had is, you know, I can't find too much other strategies I've said before that really have that much impact on reducing injuries.
Yeah, no, I agree. And when we're reducing injuries and we're increasing positive attitude, we're enhancing recovery, we ultimately improve performance no matter what you're doing, Dr. Mrazek. Such important stuff that I think a lot of people just don't think about. Well, because how would you think about it if you've never heard of it before, right?
Very much so. And like I say, there's so much information available. You can type in, you know, anxiety and stress and coping strategies in the internet. But what does that mean to you? What does that mean for you know, if you're 15 and 16 and you're going out for an elite hockey team? Like, how do you really implement that? And just like skill takes a lot of time to develop, cognitive skills, mental skills, the same thing. And the research, I mean, has been pretty exciting that way, where when we do transmagnetic stimulation, so basically mapping of the brain and brain activity, we can see that after a brain is trained with relaxation strategies, after about 4 to 6 weeks, we see changes in the brain functioning. So that's why we know we have pretty good scientific evidence behind this.
Oh, I'm going to lose some more sleep tonight because of you, Dr. Mrazek. I'm going to lose more sleep thinking about all this stuff. You know, it seems it's, and I am blaming you. I'm blaming you, damn it. but that's good. This is the way I love to lose sleep, thinking about all the potential. This is something, you know, the thing I like about this is, you know, we've been doing all this great stuff for athletes at the highest level and the developmental levels. We've been working with our coaches and trying to get really good systems in place. But I think sometimes we don't start at the beginning. We start way down the line where we, you know, think we're going to have an impact. This sounds like, to me, I can see this in a few years being where everything starts. Because if this is in place, you could really work your magic.
Well, and just think of how radical that would be is that at the start of the season, what are people thinking about? Well, I got to skate. I got to get in shape. Mm-hmm. You know, I got to do all these things. What happens if instead of doing that, you took the first 2 weeks and just worked on your mental game?
Yeah.
Just, you know, nobody's ever done, you know, actually done a clinical trial with that. But the principles of putting those principles in place, I think, could have a profound impact on how people perform. So I would agree with you is that, you know, there's certainly room for growth here. But there needs to be, I think, that change in our behavior, the way we approach things, and really understanding how the mental side of things can make such a difference at the start of the season, middle of the season, and end of the season.
Well, if you get texts from me tomorrow at 4 a.m., you know damn well why, mister. I'm telling you right now. And I might just do out a call for volunteers here as well, because I love the idea of that. I really, really do. The wheels are churning. Dr. Mrazek, once again, thanks so much for your time today. Fantastic conversation.
You bet. Thanks for having me, Jeff.
That was a fantastic conversation, and yes, I will lose a little sleep, and from a couple episodes ago, we know that's not a good thing. Dr. Samuels and Dana Santez joined us a few episodes ago talking about the importance of sleep, but if there's a good reason to lose sleep, this is it, no doubt about it. So great stuff from Dr. Mrazek. All right, let's cut out for a quick break. When we come back, why don't we talk about where should we start in our performance plan? What do we need to consider before we even start our training? Well, there are some ideas out there for sure. Let's talk about it after this on Crush Performance. Stick around, everybody.
I'm Matt Zemek, and with Saqib Ali, I am the co-host of the Tennis with an Accent podcast. Don't you want tennis to be talked about the way tennis fans like to talk about the sport? And don't you want a tennis podcast that is tailored to a person who appreciates the sport of tennis? I'm not talking about the casuals. I'm talking about the diehards, the tennis junkies, the people who love the sport beyond just the superstars. We'll talk about Federer. We'll talk about Nadal and Djokovic and Serena and Halep. We can definitely talk about those players all day, and we're happy to, but we're also going to take you behind the scenes and talk about other players that tennis fans want to know a little bit better. Saqib and I talk to coaches, we talk to historians, we also talk to journalists and former players. We offer perspectives around the world in many different accents, and that's why we call ourselves the Tennis with an Accent podcast. It's available on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Google Play, and RadioInfluence.com.
If you have any performance questions, comments, or smart remarks, text Crusher at 101260 and follow him on Twitter at Jeff Crush. Now, here he is, the Crusher.
Okay, welcome back, everybody. Well, big discussions today. Just off a great conversation with Dr. Martin Mrazek. Listen, if you want to hear that interview again, go to our website, crushperformance.com, and go to the podcast. This is a big one. It's a really, really important one because we know that reducing the risk of injuries is priority number one. On the physical side,
In my background as a strength and conditioning coach, it is of the utmost importance. It's one of our top priorities. If we go through our priority scale again, everything revolves around two major priorities. One, improving performance and reducing risk of injury. And depending on the circumstance or the athlete, those might even be reversed. Reducing risk of injury might be the number one priority for an at-risk athlete, an athlete who maybe has a previous injury or may have been dealing with a sickness or a circumstance that might make them more susceptible to injury. It's very, very important to manage that. At the end of the day, you want to maximize performance over the long haul, and that means reduce the risk of injuries. All right? And what Dr. Mrazek talked about in earlier in the show with the clips from Dr. Johnson is a very important part of that performance plan, reducing the risk of injuries. And it's not something we typically think about because, well, let's face it, a lot of people don't know about this stuff. Reducing the risk through psychological factors like coping strategies, dealing with stress, how do you manage irritability, and what do you do to minimize the factors that are going to distract you over the course of your day, your week, your month, and your year. It's an important part of planning, and it's where you need to start. It's one of the first things that needs to be addressed. Unfortunately, it's typically a reactionary response. We do this after the fact. When in a perfect world, if we started doing these things right from the get-go, oh boy, we would see the world of performance change dramatically. Now, don't get me wrong. This is going on in the world of sport. For me personally, just not often enough. And these are strategies you can use outside of sport. This has no exclusivity to sport and sport performance. Anywhere there's human beings trying to get better, this stuff counts. It really, really does. So I got to thank Dr. Mrazek for that incredible conversation. One thing I just want to mention out of that interview with Dr. Mrazek is that the topic of, or the idea of, regulating human behavior, the rule changes, and Dr. Mrazek mentioned it. It was a real interesting point I thought that he made. The rule changes have been great and they're effective and they're well-intended. But in the big picture, you know, he mentioned the NFL the following year after they instituted all of the rules to decrease head injuries, the following year, we saw a marked increase in lower body injuries because now athletes were looking for a different way to get the job done. And was it as harmful? Well, the numbers are indicating almost that. Now, we're not getting brain injuries and concussions at the rate we were, which is an absolute good thing because that's a mysterious process. It's not a typical injury like we would see in the musculoskeletal system, but we don't want our athletes injured at all. So it was interesting to hear Dr. Mrazek mention his point on being careful how we regulate human performance. Awareness is going to be critical for sure, and I think we're seeing that. So really important stuff. So where do you start? What are some of the things you need to talk about? I mentioned it 3 or 4 times in the show already. I think we start way too far down the road. We focus too much on game performance, and we don't develop the athlete first. But even before we start developing the athlete, we need to get organized, people. If you really want to make a serious assault on human performance and reaching your potential, you got to do it right. And again, I can't help but go back to this is the reasoning that we wrote the book, The Performance Plan. That whole thing came down to, Jeff, where do we start? One of the most powerful things that I think we've done for our athletes and our organizations is we've taken them back to ground zero. We've reestablished our current state, and then we've worked from there. We looked forward to where we want to go, and then we reverse engineered backwards. 3 big things. 1, you got to have an idea where you're at right now, a very clear understanding. 2, you have to really lay out what you want to accomplish at the end. Point your compass and identify where you want to go, and then reverse engineer back to where you are. And 3, a very important one. We had a conversation 2 or 3 episodes ago talking about money. You have to have a financial model that works. Parents, for your kids, athletes, for your careers. All right, you have to have a financial plan in order, because we've seen way too many careers derailed because of lack of financial planning. So that's some of the ideas that we throw out there for our athletes. So listen, we're out of time today. I want to thank everybody for listening in. I have to thank Dr. Mrazek for joining us. And if you thought this show was important, share it with your friends, your families, your teammates, your coworkers. Go back to the website, Crush Performance. You can get the podcast and pass it on. We're just trying to help people achieve. go do that. And we'll talk to you next week on Crush Performance. Thanks for tuning in.
Goodbye now. Don't forget to write.
This is a Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy Quick Fix on Radio Influence.
Ladies and gentlemen, today on Duffified Live, I've got my buddy Adam Keyes, a 31-year-old U.S. Army sergeant who returned from his tour in Afghanistan 5 years ago, a triple amputee with both legs and one hand. And my buddy is about to climb Mount Kilimanjaro.
July 14, 2010, we were on a mission and we got held up at a place where we didn't normally stay, but we'd been there a couple of times. And the night before, on the 13th, we got attacked at nighttime. They tried to do their thing. They tried to get us and take over and all that kind of stuff. And that didn't happen. So the next day, so we had to leave one truck less. That meant four or five guys would have to stay and just they'd have to hop a chopper back because we couldn't fit everybody in. Something else did happen on this mission. So, we had a lot of intel and we knew which villages we were going to be sort of coming up to and targeting that day. I was on the ground team that day. And so I was in the lead gun truck. And we'd stopped at what we thought was a great spot. And safe spot to talk on the radio for a second before we sort of hopped out and myself and three other guys would go through this village. We were sitting there 5 or 6 minutes talking on the radio, sort of reinforcing our plan that we had. And unfortunately, as soon as I opened the door, I didn't even have to hit the ground. The ID went off. We didn't know, but we were already sitting on top of it.
Wow.
It was a command detonation. So that just means somebody else was watching us and they pull the trigger when they want to. And he detonated the IED. And unfortunately, this is the hard part of the story, but the other four guys in the truck did not make it. So I just like to quickly say their names, because that's very important to me. But we lost Chase Stanley from California that day, Zach Fisher from Missouri that day, Matthew Johnson from Minnesota that day. And we alluded to before, my best friend Jesse Reed from Allentown was in that truck and we lost him that day as well.
Wow.
Yeah. So those guys, those five guys and four from that day in particular, are my heroes, and they give me a lot of drive to keep moving forward. Because even though I lost my legs and my left hand here, I know I'm very, very lucky to be here in the first place. And it was a lot of hard work to get me where I'm at today.
Duffified Live with Chef Brian Duffy can be found on iTunes, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, and of course, RadioInfluence.com.